This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Hi, my name is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. On May 15th, our office held its second annual domestic terrorism conference, where we brought together law enforcement, intelligence, and academic professionals to discuss the topic of domestic terrorism and its presence in our communities across the country and internationally. The series of podcasts you're about to hear are interviews with many of those featured speakers who were there that day. We hope you find them interesting and as informative as we did.
Hi, Intelligence Unclassified listeners. I'm Angie Gadd. I'm a senior intelligence analyst with the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. I'm here today with Thomas E. Brzozowski, who currently serves as the Counsel for Domestic Terrorism in the Counterterrorism Section of the United States Department of Justice. He received his Bachelor of Arts in International Relations from the College of William and Mary in 1996, after which he immediately was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army. Mr. Brzozowski spent 3 years as an artillery officer at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, before he was selected to attend law school under the auspices of the U.S. Army-funded legal education program. After law school, Mr. Brzozowski spent 6 years in Europe serving as an officer in the U.S. Army JAG Corps. He then left active duty and clerked for Judge Stanley Birch Jr. at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, Georgia. Prior to taking up his current position, Mr. Brzozowski was an assistant general counsel in the FBI's Office of General Counsel. He also serves as the deputy legal advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the U.S. Army Reserves. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
How does the Department of Justice define domestic terrorism?
Well, that's one of the tricky issues that underscores some of the subtleties of domestic terrorism. Presently, the federal government defines domestic terrorism pursuant to its statutory definition, which can be found under Title 18, 2331-5. And I'm going to paraphrase that here instead of reading specifically from the statutory definition. But in effect, domestic terrorism is defined as those activities which involve acts that are dangerous to human life, that appear to be intended to coerce or intimidate a civilian population, or to affect the policy of a government through coercion or intimidation, or to affect the policy of a government through mass murder, assassination, and the like. That's the federal definition of domestic terrorism. And I should note, a quick side note, that these acts are specifically considered by the federal government to include only those which occur within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States. That is to say, activities that appear to be influenced or affected by foreign governments or foreign terrorist organizations would not be included within the definition of domestic terrorism.
And what is the current approach by the U.S. government to address the issue of domestic terrorism?
Well, it's multi-pronged. The first order of business, in my view, is to develop a common vocabulary concerning what domestic terrorism is. I found in discussing this issue with a wide range of folks from federal, state, and local authorities to think tanks to academic folks who do a lot of research in this area that still continues to be a difference of opinion about what domestic terrorism is in the first instance. So, toward that end, our first effort is to try to develop a common understanding of what we mean when we say domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. Now, part two would be to harness the capabilities of federal, state, and local partners with a view towards disrupting domestic terrorism plots before they mature. And then, of course, bring cases against and prosecute those who are ultimately found guilty of perpetrating criminal activity that can be defined as domestic terrorism.
And then what are some of the underlying issues behind federal limitations on tackling domestic terrorism?
Well, I don't know that I would say that there are limitations to the federal approach in terms of tackling domestic terrorism. I think really what it comes down to is the lack of a particular statute that's entitled domestic terrorism. Because I need to remind you that Title 18 is a statutory definition. Mm-hmm. There is no specific federal statute that outlaws domestic terrorism. And as a result, that sows confusion amongst the wider public with regard to the federal government's ability to combat domestic terrorism. I think one of the core means whereby the federal government does its work is to partner with state and locals with a view towards, again, disrupting domestic terrorism plots before they come to fruition and investigating and prosecuting domestic terrorism, using state authorities where necessary, and then also leveraging federal statutory offenses that may not necessarily be characterized as domestic terrorism themselves with a view towards disrupting domestic terrorism plots. A prime example would be to charge an individual who is maybe involved in a domestic terrorism plot with being a felon in possession of a weapon. That's a federal offense, and we can charge that individual with that offense and put him away for quite some time, and at the same time disrupt a domestic terrorism plot.
Tom, on that note, domestic terrorism is not a specific charge here. We currently don't have a federal criminal charge for domestic terrorism like we do for international terrorism, and you touched on this in your talk earlier. Can you explain why that is?
Well, we need to remember that technically speaking, we don't have a charge that outlaws international terrorism either. There, I mean, if you did a kind of a deep dive into the code, there is no law that outlaws international terrorism per se. But rather what you have are a series of laws you find under, say, for example, the header of Federal Crimes of Terrorism. Typically, these laws include things like murdering U.S. officials or U.S. citizens abroad, or attacking an international airport, or most commonly, providing material support to a foreign terrorist organization. These laws and like provisions are grouped under what are construed as federal crimes of terrorism. So, again, that's a long way of saying that technically there's no crime outlawing international terrorism by itself either. Some of the difficulties associated with developing a crime that would outlaw domestic terrorism specifically concern the material support provision. So in many instances, folks will say, well, under the federal code, there are two material support provisions under 18 U.S.C. 2339. There's 2339 capital A and 2339 capital B. Now, you're probably most familiar with the 2339 capital B one. That's the one that outlaws providing material support to a foreign terrorist organization, right? The 2339 A one, there is no such requirement under that provision. By that, I mean that it merely outlaws providing material support to terrorists, full stop. It doesn't take that extra step into talking about a foreign terrorist organization. So that's sometimes appropriate in the context of domestic terrorism and prosecutions. But there's a limitation in terms of how far you can go with in applying that. Because in order to bring that charge, and I apologize in advance for getting kind of into the weeds here, but in order to bring that charge, you have to have a predicate federal offense, which are enumerated underneath 2339A. And those predicates typically involve charges that you would not usually associate with domestic terrorism. Again, attacking an international airport, things like that. So there are some limitations in the government's ability to bring that 2339A variety of material support. Secondly, the Supreme Court has signaled in dicta in Holder v. Humanitarian Law Project that any effort by the federal government to create a domestic terrorism organization list analogous to that foreign terrorist organization list that we already have would likely not pass constitutional muster. So that's a bit of a roadblock there as well. So those are some of the issues associated with crafting a federal definition of domestic terrorism that we need to consider before moving forward.
Thanks for clarifying that. Now, how can the federal government assist state and locals on domestic terrorism issues?
Well, I'd like to think, though, what we're doing right now is one way we can assist, and that is really just to bring people together to have a candid discussion about what domestic terrorism is, and also to highlight the efforts, the ongoing efforts that state and local authorities are already doing to combat domestic terrorism when they may not even recognize that it actually is domestic terrorism. Conversely, state and local authorities may be very well aware that they're handling a domestic terrorism incident, and we just need a better mechanism for them to communicate that fact up to the federal government so that we can account for it. So it's really a matter of kind of, to keep beating this drum, but hammering the development of a common vocabulary, if you will, in connection with what domestic terrorism is and how we're going to approach it. So it's about leveraging it right now in the absence of a domestic terrorism statute, for example. It's about leveraging, you know, authorities that we do have available to combat the issue. So in many instances, domestic terrorism investigations will result in state and local charges because there is no available federal sanction that could adequately address the criminal activity. If that's the way that we have to go, then that's the way we have to go. That doesn't mean that it's the underlying criminal activity isn't still domestic terrorism, because it is. It's just handled at the state and local level.
Yeah. Earlier, you gave a kind of a historical breakdown of the different domestic terrorist groups that were the current threat at the time, historically, starting from 1910. Today, which domestic terrorist group or trend, in your opinion, causes you the most concern?
Well, first of all, domestic terrorism has been part of our history, really, dating since the inception of the Republic. So it goes well back before 1910. I did use that as sort of a benchmark to demonstrate some of the progression of domestic terrorism and how that affects the Department of Justice. But I have to sort of caveat things up front with the fact that I'm not an analyst. So, I can only base what I'm saying on the nature of the investigations and prosecutions that I've seen over the past year, for example. And there has been a significant uptick in animus towards the police, for example, in several high-profile police shootings that appear to have been motivated by a domestic-related ideology. Moreover, we've also, on the other side of the fence, we've seen a fair uptick in substantial investigations and takedowns of white supremacists, extremists, that appear bent on sowing destruction in furtherance of their particular brand of ideology. So, again, I'm reluctant to kind of provide an analytical assessment, because I think the analysts would get quite upset with me if I tried to do that, and rightly so. But that is my sense based on just seeing the information that I've been privy to so far.
I think I can concur. I mean, our analysts, those are the two trends that we are covering at the moment, threats against law enforcement and white supremacist extremist activity. So lastly, just to wrap up, is there one good domestic terror resource you could recommend to our listeners?
Right. So recently, and I apologize in advance for not having the exact name of this material, but I do know that within the past year, and I want to say within the past month, PBS put out two segments that touched on the Oklahoma City bombing and the Ruby Ridge episodes. And they did a fair job in terms of tracing the genesis of the ideology that animated both of those incidents all the way back to its roots. I would highly recommend both those episodes.
Great. We all watched them together.
Well, then there you go. Looks like I got the right one.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.